This is International Edition. My name's Ira Melman. Coming ahead, we'll look at these stories and more. It has been a very busy day, unfortunately. First news of an attack early this morning in France.
It is a terror attack. There are no doubts about it.
Is French President Hollande saying, yes, an attack was a terrorist attack. That was followed by other attacks in Kuwait and Tunisia. We'll cover it all for you. The U.S. president is in South Carolina in the wake of a mass shooting in an African-American church there. And the U.S. Supreme Court comes down with a decision on gay marriage. All that coming up right here on The Voice of America. As we have told you, this has been an extremely busy day as far as those of us in the news business is concerned. It started early this morning when reports started to flow in about an attack in France, not in Paris, not far from Lyon, however. Let's check in with Lisa Bryant, and she is in Paris, walking along a very beautiful canal in Paris, but things throughout that country are a little tense now, I would think.
Yes, they are indeed. Ira, it's, you know, it is a beautiful day, but not so far away in near Lyon, there's been an attack on a factory. There was a man who has been identified as Yassine Sahli. He's about 35 years old, and so far he's considered the top suspect in what was basically a very gruesome attack. A suspect, possibly two, drove into the factory that had gas. There were a couple of explosions. There were at least two people who were wounded, and one person was dead and died in a very brutal way. There was his head, decapitated head, apparently hanging from outside the factory.
Now President, let me interject here just a second in that President Hollande was very quick while he was still in Brussels to come out and call this a terrorist attack. What do you think led to that?
Yes, he was very quick to come out with the terrorist attack, basically saying that it seemed to point that way. I think probably because there were apparently Arabic writings around. Authorities are still trying to take a look and see what they mean, but there are reports it may be linked to Islamic State. And also because France, about 6 months ago, as you probably remember, had three waves of terrorist attacks over several days, and 17 people were killed. So it's not the first time that French authorities have been faced with terrorism, and the intelligence seems to point to the fact that indeed it was a terrorist attack.
Lisa, there were two other attacks, one in Kuwait, another on a beach at a resort in Tunisia. Can you just describe a little bit of what might have happened there, and is it possible that there's a connection between all three?
Well, it is very coincidental, you're right. But so far, there doesn't appear to be a connection, except for the fact that if indeed the all three are, for example, linked to the Islamic State group, the Islamic State has said to step up terrorist attacks during the month of Ramadan, which we're in, against, for example, Christians, against, Shiites. And in the case, at least, of all three attacks, the Tunisia attack was on a beach with a lot of foreigners. The attack in France obviously was in France, a country that has been targeted by Islamic State. And obviously in Kuwait, it was on a Shiite mosque. Tunisia and France, the attacks took place almost simultaneously. And the presidents of Tunisia and France, in a declaration, said that they were in solidarity in fighting the terrorism. And obviously ties between France and Tunisia go back a long way and are very close.
Thank you, okay. Lisa. Thanks a lot. That's Lisa Bryant. Hanging in the air is that question of whether the attacks are somehow related. As Lisa mentioned, there were two other attacks deemed as terrorism Friday in Tunisia, at least 27, maybe 28 now killed in a terrorist attack on a hotel. Most of those people on a beach along the Mediterranean. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility already for a suicide bombing at a Shiite mosque in Kuwait's capital that killed at least 25 people. Sarah Williams is speaking with Claude Monnequet. He is CEO of the Brussels-based European Strategic Intelligence and Security Center.
What does this indicate? Could this possibly be coordinated attacks?
I don't think, of course, the investigation is just at the very beginning, but I don't see those facts to be connected. But what is interesting is that even if they are not connected, even if they're not in a coordination, they clearly answer to the same rules, the same motivation, and the same ideological frame, which is the one of the ISIS, the Islamic State.
Why do you say that? Why do you think that they have, what do they have in common?
Two facts. First, the targets. The two country targeted. France is the first, if I can say, European exporter of jihadists to Syria and Iraq. And Tunisia is the first exporter of jihadists to Iraq and Syria in North Africa. So that's clearly those two countries have a problem with radical Islam. That's the first point. The second point is the modus operandi. The beheading of a man in France is typical of the Islamic State. And the targeting of civilians on the beach in Tunisia is typical also of the Islamic State. And thirdly, if you take just Tunisia in consideration, actually Tunisia was already targeted by the Islamic State three months earlier when the Bardo Museum was attacked in Tunis.
I thank you very much, Mr. Monnequet, for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Sarah Williams. By the way, Claude Monnequet, with whom Sarah was just speaking, is CEO of the European Strategic Intelligence and Security Center in Brussels, Belgium. What do you have to say about all this? Well, following that is our social media editor, Andrew Palczewski, with a look at what is trending. Andrew, are these attacks on the top of most of people's minds?
Absolutely. And the interesting thing, actually, is that they were trending topics earlier this morning. And then around 10 o'clock here on the East Coast of the United States, the Supreme Court came out with their ruling same-sex marriage in the United States to be legal and constitutional. And so that actually kind of knocked these other stories out of the headlines. The hashtag Love Wins was actually the top trending headline, or the hashtag, excuse me, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. And then you also had Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote the opinion, that name was trending. Justice Clarence Thomas, who compared the decision to slavery, saying slaves didn't have their dignity taken away, so it doesn't count in this case for gay Americans. But this is kind of the thing that's been dominating social media, like I said, worldwide. You have people sharing photos. The White House put out a photo of the mock-up of the White House, or the icon of the White House with a rainbow flag over it. That's been shared on Facebook 268,000 times, or liked 268,000 times, shared 87,000 times in just a few short hours. So this has been the big story, but it's been a busy day of news for sure. The other big story that I'm sure we'll be seeing on social media in the coming hours is that of Charleston, South Carolina, where President Obama, Vice President Biden, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and many other big political names are going down there for the funeral services for Reverend Pinckney, who was the reverend of the AME church where the Charleston shooting took place. So President Obama will be giving a eulogy there. That'll surely be trending on this very, very busy news day.
Yeah, very busy news day, Andrew. And just tell me, does that really translate on a heavy news day like that as far as volume is concerned on social media?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said, that one photo just from the White House alone is, 268,000 likes on Facebook, 87,000 shares. And that's not the only one. Another map that's been making the rounds is a progression of over the years which states have legalized same-sex marriage. And the map at the end of it is all white. All the states are white because all the states now, as of today, same-sex marriage is legal. So it's, things like that, those kind of memes and photos certainly drive a lot of traffic. And in addition to these other news stories that would drive traffic, for example, Tunisia, hashtag Tunisia was the top trending hashtag this morning because of the terrorist attack there. But as the news cycle goes, and especially on a busy day like today, it kind of jumps around from topic to topic. But as I said, a busy day for the news and a busy day on social media for sure.
Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palcheski right here on International Edition. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
An international team of scientists are reporting that they have discovered a comet-like tail trailing a small exoplanet, one outside of our solar system, and only 33 light-years away. The tail is really a cloud of hydrogen escaping from the exoplanet, identified as GJ-436b. The scientists say that the hydrogen cloud is being created as X-rays from its sun, a red dwarf star, burn off the exoplanet's upper atmosphere. While escaping gas has already been observed in larger gas giant exoplanets, scientists were quite surprised to see the phenomenon on such a smaller planet. They say their observations might help others imagine what could happen to Earth several billion years from now when our sun is expected to become a red giant. Astrophysicists say that Earth could then be transformed into a giant comet that resembles GJ-436b. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition coming your way. We will get to that story that Andrew was just talking about that's trending so heavily in social media, and that is a decision on gay marriage by the U.S. Supreme Court. Stay with us. This is International Edition. President Barack Obama delivers a eulogy Friday at the funeral of South Carolina State Senator Clementa Pinckney. He was one of the nine black people killed by a white gunman at an historic African-American church last week. VOA's Jerome Sokolowski is in South Carolina. Jerome, where are you, and what is happening as far as President Obama's participation in the proceedings today?
Well, right now I'm outside a sports arena where the president is scheduled to give his eulogy. And there's a very long line of people now trying to get in. As you can hear, there's a drummer's troupe here playing.
Give me an idea of the tone and the mood in Charleston.
The mood is very upbeat. I mean, there are people who are complaining about the heat here, which is above 30 degrees Celsius, heading out towards 40. You know, people talk about how meaningful this day is for them, especially the African-Americans who are waiting to come here. They believe it's long overdue, and there is an important change going on in this country.
Now, there is a special relationship, or was, we're sorry to say, between President Obama and Reverend Pinckney. Can you talk about that?
That's correct. They met during his campaign, the first presidential campaign in 2008. Apparently, Reverend Pinckney was one of the people who encouraged President Obama, or then-candidate Obama, to go ahead and become to really believe that he could become this nation's first black president. I just want to stress how meaningful it is for African Americans here in South Carolina. They've seen unrest happening in other places in the country as a result of racial trouble. But here the reaction has been overwhelmingly peaceful, unlike the riots in Baltimore or in Ferguson.
I appreciate it, Jerome, and thank you for giving us the time.
Sure, Ira. Anytime.
As Jerome just said, there is a mood, a positive mood in Charleston, South Carolina, prior to the funeral of Reverend Pinckney. Joining us now in studio is VOA's White House correspondent Luis Ramirez. President Obama is in Charleston now. Luis, how do you think he is viewing this visit?
Well, he is there to give his condolences, and that is the primary reason for his visit. He already began to do that after the shooting. If you recall, when it was very soon after it happened, he came out to address reporters in the White House and said, you know, he's just made too many statements like this. He chose not to focus as much on the issue of race as he did on the matter of gun control, taking this very slowly. He said the matter is under investigation, and so let's wait until we have the facts before we make a judgment on exactly what happened, even though we know now that the suspect had a background of racism, of supremacy. And what the facts are on the ground now, according to the president, is that the facts are that here was a gun that ended up killing 9 people. And he said that it is time for the United States to start to reckon with the fact that this is happening more often in this country than it is in many other advanced countries.
He was visibly upset when he made that announcement. And there was some anger that I detect in any way. Has that been talked about? I mean, is he angry over what has happened?
He definitely is angry. It was a very emotional statement, and certainly in Charleston, the remarks are very emotional. They're expected to be. But for now, he is choosing to direct that anger at the issue of guns. That is to say, this incident is a wake-up call, as he sees it, for this country to start to examine its policy on selling guns, on who those guns are ending up with. That's where he's starting. On the matter of race, well, it goes without saying. This is a central issue for him, of course. It always has been in his presidency. And so it is very much there. But his approach is one that it is better to wait and see what the investigation says and then proceed from there.
Thank you, Luis. That's Luis Ramirez, VOA's White House correspondent. Stay with us here on the International Edition. Coming up, we will delve more deeply into today's U.S. Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage in all 50 states. Stay with us, please. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is International Edition. My name is Ira Melman. As we have been telling you over the past 20 minutes or so, the U.S. Supreme Court just a few hours ago handed down a landmark decision ruling that the Constitution of the U.S. does guarantee people of the same sex the right to get married. That touched off all kinds of celebrations on the steps of the Supreme Court among the gay community. Among those celebrating, Daniel Brewer and Greg Roberts, a gay couple married in California last year. They're joining us now live. Daniel here in Washington, Greg from nearby West Virginia. Gentlemen, welcome to International Edition. You live here in Washington. Gay marriage has been legal here for a while, and you had no trouble last year getting a marriage license in California, as we understand it. So what difference does today's Supreme Court ruling mean to you?
Hi, Ira. It's great to be with you. For us, it means that we have options if we ever wanted to move to another state, if we want to even visit another state. I think that this ruling helps us feel more comfortable doing so. And hopefully for everybody else that wants to get married, it makes them feel a little better about it, too.
Now, you know, by the way, am I talking with Daniel or Greg so far?
This is Daniel.
All right, Daniel, Greg, what do you say? You know that there is opposition to this throughout the United States. I guess we can call them traditionalists who say that marriage should be between two people, one man and one woman. Of course, you have heard that throughout the years. What do you say to them?
Greg?
Well, I think, it's all about love. And even in the Bible, Jesus really taught everything is about love and loving one another. And, you know, times do change. And even with other items that are in the Bible, those that cling to their faith in this instance, you know, times have changed on other instances in the Bible. And, you know, we progress as human beings. And, you know, this is a big progression on that, where love's going to win out.
Well, what do you, you guys are probably celebrating. What are you going to do to observe this occasion?
I'm planning on going out tonight and celebrating with all of our friends and loved ones who are so happy about this. I mean, it's just such a celebration. You look on Facebook and everybody's celebrating. I can't wait to get out of here and go and celebrate with everybody.
I told Daniel jokingly, let's get married again and again and again. How happy we are that this ruling came down.
Well, if this ruling,
and I reminded him about how expensive it was the first time. So we'll just we'll keep the first marriage and keep it alive forever and ever.
Well, for sure, in a way, I guess that this decision is going to save you some money because you don't have to get married in every state you go to, right?
That is true.
Exactly.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it, Greg.
Thank you.
And Daniel.
Thank you.
Congratulations, and have a good night. Okay.
Thank you so much. We will. Bye-bye.
All right. That is the gay couple that we talked to after this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it is a landmark decision, a ruling that the Constitution guarantees people of the same sex the right to get married. If you'd like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcasts, go to our website at voanews.com. My name is Ira Melman. Thanks for joining us here on International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This month marks 1 year since Nadia Savchenko was abducted in eastern Ukraine and smuggled against her will into Russia. 1 year of her being held hostage under illegal detention, and 1 year of absolute heartache for her mother, her family, and the people of Ukraine. In a statement marking the 1 year anniversary of Savchenko's detention, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power said that Nadia has endured relentless interrogations, solitary confinement, and forced psychiatric evaluation. Recently, Russian courts extended her detention yet again until September 30th. This continued imprisonment, said Ambassador Power, is indefensible, illegal, and it flies in the face of Russia's commitments under the Minsk agreements. Under the Minsk II agreement, Russia must release all hostages and illegally held persons. Nadia Savchenko, a member of the Supreme Council of Ukraine, also known as the Verkhovna Rada or Ukrainian Parliament, and a helicopter pilot in the Ukrainian military, was seized by Russia-backed separatists in 2014 before they transferred her to Russian custody, and was charged in connection with the deaths of two Russian journalists covering the conflict fomented by Russia in eastern Ukraine. Savchenko has held a lengthy hunger strike protesting her arrest and insists that the charges against her are fabricated. The United States remains deeply concerned about the state of Ms. Savchenko's health and the terms of her detention. Civil society groups believe that there are at least 10 other Ukrainians being subjected to politically motivated prosecution in Russia. Other individuals being held in Russia without due process include Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov and civic activist Oleksandr Kolchenko. They have been held in pretrial detention for nearly a year since their arrest in Crimea on May 11, 2014. They were arrested on dubious charges of plotting terrorism. Speaking at a hearing on April 8th in Moscow's Lefortovo District Court, Mr. Sentsov reportedly said that he could not agree with the decision to extend his custody since there had not been any evidence presented by the prosecution of his alleged participation in or organization of terrorist activities in Crimea. The United States once again calls for Russia's complete and immediate implementation of the Minsk agreements, including the return of Nadia Savchenko, Oleg Sentsov, Alexander Kolchenko, and all unlawfully detained persons. The U.S. further calls on Russia to withdraw all of its forces from Ukrainian territory and end its occupation of Crimea.